the Institute on Religious Life and the Daughters of St. Mary of Providence of Chicago bring you the following conference in a series of conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. on the theme, The History of Religious Life. Father John Hardin is a professor of theology at St. John's University in New York. He is a well-known lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises, and is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin is the author of many articles and books, including Holiness in the Church and the Catholic Catechism, which has been strongly endorsed by Holy Mother Church. In this next conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, The Decline and Reformation of Religious Life After St. Benedict. Father Hardin.
First, some observations. Why was there need for a reformation? There was a need for a reformation because there had been a decline, which is a nice word for saying that there had been a secularization of religious life. What were some of the features that became prominent and for which all those reformers, and I just chose the biggest, struggled to overcome? First was poverty. Monasteries became wealthy. With increased wealth, a number of things happened. They would get people of prominence and wealth into the community, which in itself wouldn't be bad, except that often then they would set the norm or the pattern for the way of life in that community. Moreover, while keeping the principle of sharing, it was no longer in not a few monasteries sharing the poverty, but sharing the wealth. It's not bad. Kind of poverty that anybody would enjoy. Moreover, with increased wealth came increased pride. Now, part of it was created by the primitive conditions among which the early monastic missionaries worked. As you know, they would go into a previously uncivilized territory. Number of monks or nuns, as the case might be, might establish themselves, and then would somehow attract the people to come there, be taught some trade or some means of improving their crop or whatever, and gradually the gospel would be preached, and in time the countryside would be converted. Well, that was all very well, except that the property then became the property of the monastery, and the abbot became a prince abbot. He became, in effect, a civil ruler, because the people who needed spiritual direction needed other kinds of direction too. And often, instead of doing what would have been more reasonable, to train leaders from among their own ranks, the monks themselves would be the leaders. You follow the misstep that was taken? This is all well-intentioned and often very necessary. Moreover, along with increased wealth, there was a great deal of leisure. And with the leisure, there was increased hired help. May I suggest to communities that have a large number of people working for them, or for that matter, anyone working for you, to take a long, hard look. This I consider, and I know good communities that have to do it often because the state requires it, to be one of the most serious threats to the future of religious life in a country like ours. So you've got the money, or you get the money, so you hire. So what do villages become? Yeah. You're the ones in charge. Grand ladies. Well, they go off and get specialized degrees because they have to qualify for those positions which the state requires. All I know, I've taught too many good minds not to know this. You put too much education in the wrong mind, and you've inherited a problem. She may be bright. That's not the point. Is she humble? If she's not, God help that community. So that's what happened. And by the way, that's what's happening now. Still again, with the increased leisure, the spiritual comfort that we spend so much time talking about, you know what the monks would do? They would read about it. Well, it's good to read about the spiritual combat, but the real idea of the spiritual combat is to engage in a spiritual combat. I've listened to people talk about mysticism. You'd think they were, well, a latter-day Teresa of Avila. They're not. Leisure. With leisure comes laziness, and with laziness, any sin, including sins of the flesh. And this is where, now that I'm working, have been for the last 4 years with the Missionaries of Charity in New York, both groups, the active and the contemplative. Well, I'm every week for 3 hours at least with the contemplatives, and I know what's happening to other missionaries of charity in other parts of the world. Oh, I wish there's no way you'd have to experience it. There's no way you can really describe it. The fervor of a young community on fire with the love of God. It's breathtaking, honest. I'm really not sure whether I'm teaching those young women more or they're teaching me more. Grace grips them. And by the way, don't stay more than about 3 days. They find out if they belong. Some stay a little longer, but in time, you find out. You can't keep up with the others. Now, this is true, I suppose, of all life. You have a rise, we develop, reach a peak, and then the inevitable decline. But unlike a human body, the spirit can be rehabilitated. We're going through one of those periods in history. That's why I wanted to say a little bit about this. And religious communities have got to be reformed to survive. The only communities that are going to survive into the 21st century, the only ones, are those that will radically reform, radically. Poverty, real poverty. Chastity, no cheating, no cheating. And can villages ever cheat on chastity and obedience? Now, living a community life, it is community life. Now, the person can't take it, she doesn't belong, period. So what's the fuss? She'll save her soul, maybe become a saint, but not here. So that's the reason why there was a Reformation, because there was need for one. Another area of observations. You will notice the widespread of the saints, and I deliberately chose such a wide coverage. England, Italy, France, and I might have gone elsewhere. It indicates that there is something inherent in religious life, that unless people watch and keep examining their collective consciences, no country has a monopoly on the crisis that befell religious life then and is befalling religious life today. The Society of Jesus is now down to one province for the whole of France. However, the main feature that I want to bring out is the fact that in each case, the Reformation was achieved by some outstanding person or persons. The fact that I have them identified is just my way of making clear that we can see exactly when, under whom, a previously secularized community was reformed. On what areas did these reformers mainly concentrate? They all concentrated on the lack of poverty. Hear this. The reformation of every religious community begins with poverty. Because where there are possessions, where there is wealth, there will be leisure and all the rest. There'd be no follow. Secondly, there was a reformation in terms of the quality of the candidates that were accepted. By now, I think we've all read the story of St. Bernard, maybe more than once, to know that what he was especially looking for in his immediate followers was persons who are deeply convinced of the monastic way of life. In other words, that Reformation begins with people. I got a call long distance yesterday, just before I left New York, from a religious, deeply concerned over what's happening to her community. And she's trying to hold on. She asked if I could help. Could she see me? I said, well, I'm leaving the city in a couple of hours. I'm just in New York for a day or so. Can I see you? Well, I said, sister, I don't think it's realistic. Let's just talk over the telephone. Well, she said, there are people standing around here. Well, you know, put your hand to your mouth or something. Don't talk so loud so they won't hear you. And nobody is standing around me. So she told me the story. The community, the typical story of so many communities, a Midwestern community, by the way, where the administration has, taken to the things of this world. So then I said, are there others like you that think the way you do? She said, yes, but they're afraid. I said, afraid of what? Well, afraid that something will happen to them if they talk too loud or say too much. because, well, they're under authority. So I told her, well, sisters, there's no question your community needs a reformation. But my reading of the whole history of religious life is no community has ever been reformed without reformers. And reformers are people. So I told her, sister, you have one of two things to do. Either pray for a miracle or resign yourself to the inevitable. Right? So each of these, the first thing they did, and this is what I'm telling communities today, because this is not a history of religious life to be kept over there, is to bring it to ourselves. A community will be as strong as those whom it takes now are strong and no better. And if ever we could afford to either compromise or qualify or say, well, she might change, or well, there are certain things that obviously, as a person develops, she should change. But certain basic qualities must be there. In other words, well, every one of these reformations, every one of them, was not done by speeches. It was not done by a lot of writing. It was not done by severe laws where you get a pronunciamento with a papal seal, you know, embossed in molten wax from Rome, telling the monks or the nuns to behave themselves. Isn't this good to hear? All reformations began with the new recruits being men and women of deep, strong commitment to the ideal for which that community was founded. So Bernier would go back with his monks and quote Benedict to them. This is what Benedict, this is the way we should live. Do you believe this? We do. So 5-6 centuries later, or in Bernard's case, 6 centuries. In other words, a community does not die as long as someone still keeps and is willing to pay the price for keeping the spirit of their founder. With Benedict's passing away, date 547 A.D., the middle of the 6th century, monasticism spread throughout Europe. The only possible figure of speech is like a wildfire. In any case, within 4 or so centuries, there was call for both reformation and development. I distinguish reform from development because reform has to do rather with something that has to be changed, corrected. And I checked it in the dictionary. The verb is reform, accent on the second syllable, when it's correction. When you merely reshape, it's reform, and even with a hyphen in between, reform. I'm talking about reform, change with a view to improvement or correction. There were especially 3 reasons why monasticism in the centuries following St. Benedict needed reformation. The first was the dwindling spiritual life of many of the monks and nuns. That was due in some measure at least to the large numbers that flocked in hundreds to the monasteries. It is further due to the fact that not a few came from well-to-do families, and without the proper control of poverty, it was understandable that some of these monasteries became quite wealthy. Well, now, a wealthy religious community is a liability. It would not be too bad for a community to pray to stay poor. Moreover, there were problems built into the, you might say, relatively simple. Now, some of you put down and you compared, for example, your rules with St. Benedict. You thought he was too detailed. Well, no. Normally, I didn't make any particular comments on your papers. But any time anybody criticizes a man like Benedict, I come to his defense. No. Detail. If anything, he was under-detailed. And in fact, so generic that many problems later on arose that he just didn't provide for. Secondly, the church's needs. With the expansion of population, mobility, the breakup of the Roman Empire, the wars, the rise of feudalism, the church's needs had to be met. And Benedictine monasticism needed to be somehow changed to meet those needs. And finally, the strong stress in St. Benedict on liturgical prayer left much to be desired for many who may have been quite expert in liturgical, say, chant, and would faithfully show up for the divine office 6, 7 or more times a day, but many could not pray, especially mental prayer. So the life of union with God needed to be reformed. So much for reformation. Now development. There were especially 5 areas that called for development. Partly because there was need for improvement, but partly because, well, the church goes on in monasticism, religious life went on. Things had to improve. As a matter of fact, not a few monasteries disappeared or became so lax that either the Pope or the secular powers had to suppress them. The first and, in a way, major area of development was government. In St. Benedict's vision of the superior, he was, as the word implies, a father. Well, that's all right. You can be a father to a dozen or 20 or even a few hundred monks. But you begin to multiply that, and it's remarkable what happens to fatherliness. For one thing, the contact between the abbot and the subjects was necessarily minimized. With the growing numbers, the question arose, an unsolved question that had to be resolved. What was the precise relationship of a daughter monastery to the parent monastery? Was there dependence? If so, how much? And they had some sad experiences of daughter monasteries, well, becoming wayward daughters, going off on their own, doing their thing, quite alien to the spirit of the parent monastery. Moreover, since the monks helped the people to also civilize and not just teach them the faith, the abbots often became the civil rulers of a large territory. This created some major problems as to their authority. Is it just civil or civil and ecclesiastical? What kind of obedience do the people in the countryside owe the abbot? He may be an abbot to the monks, but what is he to us? The government had to be clarified and developed. Second, asceticism. As you recall from your reading of the Rule of Benedict and what we know about original monasticism, the asceticism was indeed partly asceticism of the spirit, of the will, especially through obedience. But a heavy emphasis in asceticism was placed on bodily mortification, on watching the diet, on sleep, getting up, for example, in early hours of the morning, curtailing the sleep, to recite the divine office. Moreover, with the passage of time, more and more of the members of these institutes were either educated or at least naturally gifted people. Now, you may indeed mortify yourself by hard work, but intellectually the mind needs asceticism. That needs mortification. And I've taught intellectuals for enough years to know you better give them the equivalent of a pick, a shovel, and a hoe to train their minds. Otherwise, well, they may be handy with a hoe or a shovel, but they can be just impossible to live with because of their stinking pride. Intellectuals, with no exception, unless specially graced by God, are all proud people. Period. I've been living with them for too many years. Because anyone with brains knows he's superior. He doesn't even have to tell anybody. He knows it. And his mind can control other minds. And that's the worst kind of pride. So some kind of asceticism had to be developed, for which Benedict did not quite provide, for the spirit, especially the intellect. Labor. That needed development. Benedict was strong on manual labor. Hours in the field. Now you might often have to leave whatever you were shoveling or hoeing with, I guess a shovel and a hoe, to answer whatever bell would sound across the field to show off for whatever the hour was. And it was hard labor. But two problems arose. One, hard-working people who work industriously accumulate. The monasteries accumulated all kinds of property. Things, their produce, they could sell. People gave them money for that. So it affected poverty. And the second was, which comes first? Is it manual labor or is it the divine office? Now, as any of us know in the mixed religious life, it's one thing to say we're supposed to have a nice balance between prayer and labor, but except for it being nice on paper, it's the hardest thing to work out in real life. That had to be developed.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.